Huh?
Why are we on time?
The Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood will come to order. It's April 21st, the last day for our Senate bills. I am going to, and congratulations to Senator Cruz. Did you want to put that on the record?
Madam Chair, due to the fact that education got over 45 minutes early, it allowed me to actually be on time here. So.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 226.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 226 was replaced by amendment language. There is a dash 3 amendment before the committee that
replaces the bill.
Replaces the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair. It requires the Department of Human Services to operate 3 regional crisis teams to serve persons committed, not persons committed to DHS, but those who reside in group homes. It describes the minimum duties, it dedicates a vehicle to each of these teams, and it creates a task force on client and staff safety staffed by DHS and specifies the composition and formalities of that task force. Report to the legislature is required by September 15th of 2015, and this task force is sunsetted December 31st of 2016. The dash 3 iteration of the amendments added, there were a couple of amendments that added members to the task force. So there's no revenue impact, sorry, Madam Chair, and a light fiscal because there's been a request to do the joint ways and means.
Great. And colleagues, just to refresh your memory, this is the bill about the SACUs, the stabilization crisis units. The dash 3 is very similar to the dash 2. There were some modest corrections to that. We needed to clarify that individuals are not committed to the SACU, so that's taken care of in here. And we wanted to add a particular additional task to the task force and a couple of extra members. So the additional members that we added were an individual representing a private group home provider, representing private group home providers, agencies that serve residents who have made a transition to group homes from stabilization and crisis units, one individual representing community developmental disabilities programs. I really do know how to say the phrase developmental disabilities programs that have worked with the stabilization and crisis units to transition residents to community-based care. One individual from the Oregon Technical Assistance Corporation who has expertise in positive behavior supports and staff training, and one individual with significant experience working with individuals who have intellectual or developmental disabilities and have been involved in the criminal justice system. And the additional task was to look at the timeliness of moving residents who were ready to leave the SACU back into the community, and there's a variety of reasons why that is important. But in large part, otherwise, these are identical to the dash 1s and the dash 2s.
Is there anybody left out there that can be on a task force? All the task force we have?
I think we have picked up everybody that people have requested be added to the task force. And I would also just thank the proponents and the department and the advocates for working together on what's a very challenging issue. And this discussion will certainly continue in ways and means as well. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 226, dated 4/20/2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the dash 3 amendments, dated 4/20/2015. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move that Senate Bill 226 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 226 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? All right, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and it heads to Ways and Means. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 226. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 774.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 774 is previously heard on April the 9th. There is a dash 2 amendment that replaces the original measure. The dash 2 requires adoption of a statewide plan by the Home Care Commission, describes purpose and required content of the plan, requires the Home Care Commission contract with another entity to recommend plan design, appropriates $1.5 million to the Department of Human Services for the Home Care Commission. Commission to implement and makes specific recommendations to DHS, requires annual report from DHS beginning December 1st, 2015 on the status of recommendations, repeals recommendations and DHS reporting requirement by January 2nd, 2020, requires the Home Care Commission convene a work group, specifies the work group's focus, requires a report from the work group by September 16, 2015, and then repeals the work group and the report provisions January 2nd, 2016, requires a Home Care Commission conduct orientations for home care workers, authorizes the Commission to work independently as well as cooperatively, declares emergency effective on passage. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 2. A statement issued, fiscal statement issued, and a request from Legislative Fiscal for a referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Great. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 774 dated 4-15-2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 774 dated 4-15-2015. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 774 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 774 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. It heads to Ways and Means, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 774. And I will now open a work session on Senate Bill 307.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 307 was previously heard on February 17th and March 31st. You'll recall the testimony from Senator Johnson. This is the measure that requires the Department of Human Services to establish a procedure for residents of retirement facilities to request gender-appropriate care. There is a Dash 6 amendment before the committee. It modifies the complaint procedure, requires a response within 14 days, completion of an investigation within 90, and a written report. Some of that language is relaxed so that the providers can refuse to comply, but they have to provide the residents with written explanations and documentation. There's no revenue impact on the Dash 6 and a fiscal statement issued on the Dash 6.
And I learned today that there's a further slight modification that needs to be made, but there is a commitment to get that fixed on the House side.
Yes, and Senator Gilster, just to put on the record, that is on page 1, lines 9 and 10, where it starts, the facility shall accommodate the request unless it would be significantly difficult or costly to do so. That Senator Johnson has stated that that will be, that line will be eliminated.
Great.
On the House side.
Thank you very much. Senator Johnson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 307, dated 4-17-2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 307, dated 4-17-2015. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 307 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 307 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And I assume that Senator Johnson would like to carry this bill. I am. So Senate Bill 465 is what's next. When we had this hearing, there were a lot of questions, and there was a Dash 2 amendment that was going to come. We've never received the Dash 2 amendment or any further communication at all about this bill, so I'm going to assume that the bill is not ready to go since there's still some outstanding questions and a missing amendment. So we will
let it die.
Well. I would suggest because things would you maybe consider if that amendment is coming because it's just a technical one, we could kick it to rules and fix it there.
It was pretty significant. There were a lot of questions and concerns when we had that hearing. I don't know if you recall, and we didn't really have anything in front of us, and people were going to follow up with more information, and I truly have not heard another word at all from anybody about this bill since that.
I remember that I complained about that we were talking about the bill with the amendments,
right,
with no amendments.
So I would be nervous sending it to rules because the the changes that were described in the amendment that was to come were not technical in nature. They were described as really substantial. All right, so why don't we open up a work session on Senate Bill 465.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 465 was previously heard on March 31st. It aligns responsibility for payment of costs associated with the process that governs initiating commitment of persons with mental illness. Declared emergency was effective on passage. The Dash 1 amendment made some adjustments where they refer to county and where they refer to community mental health program to make sure that the payment of costs was lining up in a way that the counties wanted it to, and some other minor corrections, conforming changes.
Can we bring up a lifeline?
That was the Dash 1.
Sure. Why don't you bring up? I just want to be really clear, though, because we were waiting for a Dash 2 that was significant. We don't have it. It's about commitment, which is nerve-wracking. Patty O raised some pretty significant concerns when we had that hearing. It's good to get the concerns on the record, but we're not going to move it forward.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, there is no Dash 2 amendment. There's only one amendment, and I'm completely surprised that you don't have it, because Senator Prezansky's staff
told me
that's all there is. It's just the one amendment. That was a miscommunication on the part of Douglas County Council, thinking that the additional changes they made were going to be a Dash 2 amendment. It was included in the Dash 1 amendment.
Okay.
So, and we both Commissioner Morgan and I agreed on those changes, that we were okay with those. It was fine. So I'm very surprised to hear that you didn't have communication.
Yeah, I'm going back through right now, but from the day that we had that hearing, I have not received a peep from anybody.
Madam Chair, now that my memory is refreshed, we were referring to the Dash 1 amendments that hadn't actually been written yet. Okay. And they were talking about the changes, and they were assuming the Dash 1s had been written, and so that's why they were talking about the Dash 2s.
That's right.
As it turns out, the additional changes got to Ledge Council in time to include them all in the one amendment. So the Dash 1s are indeed what we want.
And I think the challenge that I have is because I left understanding there was a Dash 2. I've not seen the Dash 2. I've just gone back through all the email. Have you received any communication about this bill or about the bill at all since that? So my understanding when we left, there were a number of concerns, and just the subject matter is significant enough that I'm happy to work on it in the interim. But
Madam Chair, the subject matter is actually time sensitive. For some of the counties, some of the timber counties that are having to readjust the way they handle services, and Douglas County is clearly one of them, that has farmed out, one might say, these services. And so this is what they need to make sure that everything they're doing is still above board and legal.
And I appreciate that, but it also seems like if it was a priority, there would have been some level of communication following the hearing that didn't go particularly well. I mean, there was a lot of misunderstanding. I remember Patty O raising some questions. There was a lot of conversation about a Dash 2. Like a lot of these bills, was waiting for these things. I scheduled it out to the end to allow time for that. But can you look through to see if we've had any? I just am very uncomfortable moving something about commitment without having done the work of vetting it.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it's a complete bill with the Dash 1s, and so I would suggest, rather than have it die, that you send it to rules to give yourself a chance to confirm that it's okay, and then it could be moved from rules as is. But it is a complete, and I apologize, I assumed everybody knew at the end of the day that there wasn't going to be a Dash 2 because it was included in the ones, because the ones hadn't been written yet.
Right. But like I said, there's been absolutely zero communication from the sponsors of the bill, from the advocates of the bill, from anybody since that day.
Well, because we already had a finished product, so.
But the committee was not aware of that, and that makes it very difficult. So we have a process that we have to go through to be able to send something to rules. So we'll recess this. We'll take a recess after we get through the rest of the work. I'll talk to the Senate President's office. But just in general, for something to move, it requires communication from the proponents to move it forward, and especially about important issues like this.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Senator Pruszynski and I are co-sponsors of the bill, and maybe we were each assuming the other one was communicating. So.
Okay. So we will recess Senate Bill 465 for now. And I'm going to temporarily close the work session on Senate Bill 465. And I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 832.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 832 requires the Oregon Health Authority to set standards for coordinated care organizations to integrate delivery of mental health services and physical health services. There is a dash 2 amendment that deletes an appropriation that was being made in the underlying measure. There is no revenue impact on the dash 2, a minimal fiscal impact on the dash 2, and a request to add a substantive referral to rules on this one.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the dash 2 amendments for Senate Bill 832, dated 4/20/2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 832, dated 4/20/2015. Is there any discussion?
Yes. I just want to put on the record that there was some confusion as to what Senate Bill 832 actually did, or who it applies to, and it only applies to CCOs. I just want to make sure that was on the record. The language in the bill and the amendment does not apply to certified community health programs or agencies, and this has been confirmed by legislative counsel for the record. Thank you.
Thank you. And I understand this bill is going to rules because there's may or may not be an error in the amendment. And I understand there's also ongoing conversation about some reciprocity to make sure that CCO members have the option to access integrated care and community behavioral health homes. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 832 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair also moves Senate Bill 832 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion?
Good bill.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and it heads on to rules. So I need to go have a conversation with the Senate President's office. We still need to do a public hearing on Senate Bill 890 and have a little bit of conversation about Senate Bill 629 and Senate Bill 592. So I'm going to temporarily recess us until 3:45 so that we can work on this other issue. I'm assuming there may be a line, which is why I'm allowing more than 10 minutes. So with that, I'll temporarily recess and see you all back here in 20 minutes at 3:45. Okay, Human Services is back. When last we met, we were in a work session on Senate Bill 465, so I'm going to reopen the work session on Senate Bill 465. So I've gone to the President's office, persuaded permission to be able to send it to rules. I did contact Patio, who had raised some concerns when we had the hearing. She has texted me and believes that there are other issues with commitment statutes and that we need an interim conversation and bring a bill in February, that House Bill 3502 was dropped for the same reason. So those comments are on behalf of the hospital systems and the Oregon Psychiatric Inpatient Council. So given that there has been confusion and that there is concern being raised by patients at the state hospital and the hospital association, I'd like to send it to rules without recommendation. And we'll see what happens down there. And we'll try to work it out over the next couple days. And I'll have a follow-up conversation with Senator Rosenbaum.
What are you looking at me for?
Because you get to make the motion.
Oh.
Do we want to adopt
We need to adopt the dash one amendment.
Chair Gilstrap.
Because we don't have the paperwork.
No, we do have.
Oh, we do have. Okay. Never mind.
Chair Gilzer, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 465, dated 4-3-2015.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4-3-2015. Is there any discussion? And just for the record, the Dash 1 is the Dash 2. Yes. Okay. Is there any objection to the Dash 1? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilzer, I move Senate Bill 465 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation. Pardon me. Without recommendation. And then it be passed under rules.
So Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 465 as amended to the floor without recommendation as to passage and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
That's what I said, yes.
Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 465 makes its way to rules. Now we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 465. We did 832.
We did, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we're done with 832, and I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 890.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 890 creates a task force, which is renamed by the Dash 1 amendment, staffed by the Department of Administrative Services. The bill specifies composition, formalities, object of the task force. It requires reports to the legislature by September 15, 2016. The object of the task force is soliciting public input on definitions and values surrounding issues of poverty. Requires a report, sunsets December 31st, 2016, declares emergency effective on passage. There's no revenue impact on the Dash 1, a fiscal statement issued on the Dash 1, and it does have a subsequent referral already to Ways and Means.
Great, and we have T.J. Sheehy and Bill Thorndike. Welcome.
Chair Gelsler, members of the committee, my name is T.J. Sheehy. I'm the research director with Children First for Oregon here in support of Senate Bill 890. The federal poverty level is a poor measure of economic success, and this state needs to look into alternate measures that will more accurately evaluate whether or not our families are getting by. The problem with the federal poverty level, well, there are many, but it significantly underestimates the costs that families face. For example, in Portland, it's estimated that a family would need three times the federal poverty level to meet all of their costs, and that comes from the Economic Policy Institute. The poverty level also precludes us from looking at social programs and how effective they are in helping families get by, because the poverty level only looks at cash pre-tax income. So, for example, the earned income tax credit is completely excluded in looking at whether a family is or is not poor. And so we believe that the state needs more accurate measures that take into account the full costs that a family faces and the full breadth of income that they receive. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Bill Thorndike. I'm from Medford, Oregon. I'm the third generation owner of a steel fabrication facility in Medford and have been a longtime member of the Oregon Business Council. The Oregon Business Council, as you might know, yearly puts on the Oregon business plan in conjunction with the other business associations in the state of Oregon. And while we look at those things that can improve the economy in Oregon, it's hard not to understand the impact that poverty has on the success of Oregon economically. And so we're very, very pleased at the session prior to this media session of including a goal for the Oregon business plan of working to reduce Oregon's poverty level to below 10% as being an economic driver that can help all of Oregon. We're pleased to identify that we're willing to bring resources to the table to help better define what poverty is. As you just heard, our existing definition of poverty is pretty inadequate, and it really doesn't reflect the difference of poverty, whether it's in Pendleton, Oregon, or Phoenix, Oregon, or Portland, Oregon, and depending on what types of what communities you are a part of, the different effects of poverty. Other states have taken the charge in starting to come up with better ways of identifying that. And we're here to help through the Oregon Kitchen Project, hopefully, bringing together Oregonians to redefine and to actually come up with the sustainable definition for poverty going forward. Because I think we're also totally interested in some of the other programs that were identified in our program for this legislative session of improving public policy around poverty reduction. And I think all we have to do is look at the success from the coordinated care organizations and what we're doing now on Medicaid of trying to develop a glide path to success rather than the cliffs and the different things that we put in place for people who want to get out of poverty today and can't. This would be an integral part of that solution to better identify what poverty actually means. And so on behalf of the Oregon Business Council, we look forward to working with you on Senate Bill 890 as being a wonderful vehicle for Oregon to put its own definition on poverty going forward.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Senator Olson.
You always do that.
I'm used to Representative Olson. I'm learning the Senator Olson.
I do have a question. It's an interesting concept. And if you define poverty and you take in all the forms of remuneration that they can receive, will that then move that person or group of people up out of the poverty level, which would change what we say is poverty? Or does this redefine everything that's available to them and then says that this is the poverty level?
Chair Gelser and Senator Olson, I think, you know, it was interesting. The original title for this task force, I think, really talks about it. It's how do you break the intergenerational connections? Because right now it's so easy for families and kids to be stuck in poverty generation to generation. So I think it really does speak to the fact that it isn't just one element. It isn't just, you know, the wage. It's the housing, it's the health care, it's the community that's a part of the group of people that are living in Oregon. So I think I agree. It's a much more complex and complete view of what poverty is, because poverty is more than just whether or not you're at a certain income level.
Yeah, follow up. And I agree with you, because I think that if you get in and say that someone makes a family of four making $20,000, obviously would be in poverty. But if we combined all the extra programs that they take advantage of and we count that to what they accrue as their resources, then I'm concerned that we'll say, oh, now they're not in poverty anymore because this is what they receive. And I would not like to see that happen, because we really need to define that so we can, because that's one thing I've always complained about. Our state is ranked 33rd in poverty.
Right.
And that's not the level we need to be at. I'd like to see us be one or two, you know, the best of the best. And so I just want to make sure that this bill does not change the parameters of what we call poverty and what we don't, just saying that this is a level and then these people receive these to help them. So the other key is that we need jobs.
Well, Senator Gelser and Senator Olson, you know, you bring up a wonderful point that right now, you know, and I think anecdotally we all know about hardworking single moms out there where if they get a 25-cent raise, they lose all their benefits on child care. They lose everything. And so there's it's a terrible, I mean, we have put a canyon between poverty and middle class. And I think hopefully we can figure out a solution as to how we can move that forward so that we have healthy families, educated families going forward. And again, just because you happen to have lucked out or you have decent income for a quarter or the half of the year in Oregon, that you don't lose those connections that you really need to have a healthy family.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, is there anybody else that needs to be heard on this bill? Seeing none, thank you both very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 890 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 890.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 890, dated 3-16-2015.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments, dated 3-16-2015, to Senate Bill 890. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 890 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 890 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just want to make a point that, you know, while I fully support this task force and the work that it'll do, I wish that there were a couple of members just from the general public who were part of this, including people who were themselves living in poverty. I think that that would be a really important voice to be heard on a task force like this.
That's an excellent point. Any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And the bill moves on to Ways and Means. So I'm going to go back and open up a work session on Senate Bill 629. Colleagues, this is the right to rest bill. You maybe recall it's been a while. We had a very compelling hearing on this issue. I had hoped that we would be able to work with the proponents and opponents of the bill to find some peace that we could move forward with. Clearly, the bill as written did need a great deal of work, but I was really compelled by the testimony of those that came that day, and it really challenged some of my thinking about really the cycle of homelessness. And I guess a challenge that I would put back out to our cities is how we can get people back into housing if they're homeless and they can be ticketed for falling asleep in their own car or on a park bench when we all have a need to sleep. It's an involuntary reflex. And then you're saving your money for your first and last month rent. Now you have to pay your fine and you have a record of a violation that makes it even harder to get into housing. So I really think that we need to be looking at these issues and making sure that as cities are looking at ways to protect the public safety in their communities, to protect business interests in the communities, that we're also looking at the needs of these families and individuals in a way that is very human. And it's a complicated issue for certain, but I don't think that we want to be a state where it's against the law to fall asleep. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. So my hope is that we'll be able to do a little bit more work on this in the interim and really be able to tackle some of this in other ways. And of course, issues of affordable housing, poverty, many of the issues that we talk about here lead to issues of homelessness. There's a lot of reasons why people are living without homes, and I think it's one of the more important things that we can tackle. Does anybody else have comments on this issue?
Well, I'll just say, I mean, what struck me in the presentations that day were, you know, yes, we certainly need to find housing so that people can live, you know, in a home. But also, we need to be treating everyone with dignity. And, you know, the idea that someone is judged based on their appearance you know, you could see just how demeaning that was. We heard a lot of stories about that, and you know, I do think that we need to make sure that everyone is treated with respect, and so that idea that, you know, we shouldn't judge someone as a nuisance just because they, you know, don't look like everyone else or they've fallen asleep on the park bench, you know, et cetera. I do hope we can do something about this.
And I think there's something about that equality of falling asleep. I know I dropped my daughters off at a play rehearsal the other week. I was reading some reports in my car, and I fell asleep in the car. And when I woke up, the car was off. But when I woke up, I wondered, could I have been cited for sleeping in my car on a downtown street? And that was just the middle of the afternoon. So hopefully this issue will come back. We'll talk about it more, hopefully talk about this more in the interim on an interim agenda. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 629 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 592. So Senate Bill 592 in its first iteration was the inclusionary zoning bill. Last week we talked about this as a potential vehicle to talk about some of the issues related to people that are living in manufactured home parks. I've had the opportunity to talk to a number of people since then, and I think what is a better idea than creating a task force is to ask the coalition to work on this. The problem is that the offending parties are not always participants in this work group, And I want to emphasize again, like I did last week, this isn't all of the park owners. This is a specific slice of park owners, and I would really urge them to participate with the coalition so that we don't have to come back with legislation. It would be unfortunate for the bad actions of a small number of park owners to impact all of the park owners in the state. I had been asked to go back and get some information from my constituents about the particular issue. This woman received a rent increase at Columbus Greens in January of 2015 of $25. She's gotten a note that her rent will increase again in July, another $29. And her water bill was increased last October of 2014. It was stated because the city of Albany increased their rates. But when she called the water department at the city of Albany said that the water rate had not increased since 2013. She sent the information about all of these things to the property manager in California, but it hasn't been addressed. She and many of the others, because I've urged them to contact the park manager directly, they report that when they call the site manager, they get voicemail, they leave messages, they never get calls back. One of the other issues that's been raised is that rent is due on the first of the month, but is considered late by the fourth. I do not get my SSI benefits until the third. If the fourth falls on a Saturday, then rent is due on the Friday before, and sometimes my deposit is not in, and I have to pay a $50 late fee. These are very, very vulnerable people, and they should be able to call their site manager to work things out, but if they are doing their part to call, and the site manager is not calling back, they cannot work it out. And I know that in most parks across the state, that's fine, and that it does work that way, but in these cases with these particular parks, it isn't. I did receive a letter from the manager of this group. It had some different information than what the tenants report having experienced in terms of their rent increases and water increases. And they say that they would be happy to enter into some sort of an agreement about price increases that would be a five-year rent increase agreement with the Columbus Greens homeowners that limits future increases. That would be fantastic, but I think it's important that it's not just limited to that group, and I think that conversation, again, taking that to the coalition would be really important. I did a little bit of calculating in the group from the Investment Property Group is the group that wrote. They talked about the highest rent that they mentioned was at Windermere, $428 a month. If you look at this constituent who in the past year, not counting the water rate, has seen her rate go up by $54 a month, that's a $648 annual increase on a rent that before that was only about $5,000 a year. That's extremely difficult for a very low-income person. So, again, I would really urge... I know the coalition does great work. I would urge your clients to engage with that group and to work with that group, because if they can't, despite the good work of this group, we're not going to have any choice but to come and create legislation for everybody to fix problems that are caused by just a small number of folks. And if there could be some sort of a report back from that work group this fall so that if we need legislation in February, we can work on that, that would be great.
I certainly would like to have a report on if they're out-of-state owners. We have no jurisdiction over that. Is that true or not?
Chuck and John, do you want to come up? And would you like to come up too, Richard?
Ma- Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Van Landingham. I'm a legal aid lawyer in Eugene, and I'm the electronic secretary of the coalition. We do have authority over anybody who owns property in Oregon, no matter where they live. They have to comply with Oregon law. And there is no law right now regarding rent control other than a preemption of local governments adopting rent control. But we in the coalition work on Oregon statutes regulating the manufactured housing landlord-tenant coalition relationship. And this is something we could certainly talk about. I know it's an issue for a lot of tenants. There are a lot of good landlords, and we want to make sure that we don't punish the bad landlords, I mean the good landlords, whatever solution we might come up with. But we'd be delighted to work on this, and I don't know if delighted is the right word. We would be willing to work on this and report back.
Madam Chair, Chuck Carpenter, Executive Director of Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. We represent about 500 communities here in the state. We have found that the coalition is a positive way for us to address our issues. We're going to be probably hearing in this committee, in your committee, HB 3016, which just passed Monday unanimously out of the House, dealing with four or five issues that took us 30 hours or more to try to reconcile and talk about. And I'm proud of that legislation because both John and MHCO's attorney, Phil Quirin, worked extensively on the language, and I think it's a great piece of legislation that I think is a benefit to both tenants and landlords. There's always contentious issues for us to deal with. There seems to be no shortage of those. And I hope that we can resolve some of these issues and move forward as we've done for the last 15 years.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Richard Cosasana, and I represent the Oregon Park Owners Alliance. And one of our members, I believe, is the owner of the park that you mentioned. And the accusations or the outline that you mentioned is fairly, I find it myself, fairly disturbing. And I'd like
Me
to
too.
Get down to the bottom line. But I provided you a copy of a letter. And I would make that available to the other members, or I would hope you would make it available to the other members, because there's a dramatic difference of commentary in terms of the facts associated with this situation. But let's see if we can answer those in a very factual manner. In terms of the coalition, generally, my hat's off to it, because I think everybody makes a very, very concerted effort to sit there and work through some very good issues. Some are pretty easy and some are pretty difficult, but that coalition, I think, is a very important step forward for everybody. So with that, I'll see what I can find out about your information, and we can compare that and go from there. But thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Any further comments? With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 592. We've completed everything on the agenda. We will be here on Thursday. We have one public hearing, and then we have an information hearing. It's Young Black Men's Leadership Day in the Capitol, and we're going to be talking about the impact of a variety of things that happen in early childhood on lifelong aspirations. So I hope to see you all here then. Thank you all very much. Anything else for the good of the order? We're adjourned. Thank you all very much. Anything else for the good of the order? We're adjourned.